Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump in and talk about the topic today, I'll get it out. I'm leaving that in. I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shoe machine on the market, bar none. They are awesome. They rock. Mention Coach Unplugged. They'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. We have a special, quote unquote, special going on right now where we're giving quarterly memberships. We're super excited about that. People seem excited about it. And then that maybe come in and join for 3 months and take a couple months off. I personally would never leave teachhoops.com, but you have that option, and it's great. So go over and check it out, teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Let's head off to the podcast. All right, welcome to Coach Unplugged on a sunny day in Wisconsin, which is crazy because it, you know, and there's no snow on the ground. So that's April, and there's no snow. So I'm always happy when there's no snow on the ground. Coach is from Texas, so he's laughing at me like he doesn't know. When the snow is higher than my head, then you know it's been a tough winter. So Coach Van Hook, I want you to kind of introduce yourself, kind of tell your basketball journey, how you ended up in Texas, or if you are from Texas, I don't even know that, and then we'll go from there.
Gotcha. So I grew up around Oklahoma City, a suburb of Oklahoma City called Edmond. And went to Oklahoma State University, and I was just a guy. I didn't play college basketball. I had
did division you play in high three. School?
I did. Okay. Three-year letterman. Senior year, I was – the Daily Oklahoman is the big newspaper in the Oklahoma City area, and I was voted Daily Oklahoman Scholar Athlete of the Year, or I was on a team of Scholar Athletes of the Year. My chances to play college basketball were at Division III's, which would have been fun, but they were smaller than my high school. And at 19, I was arrogant and it just wasn't for me. So I was just a guy at Oklahoma State, and I started off engineering, hated it, switched to business, hated it. And I switched into education because I had a math skill set. You know, I'd already been through calculus two in college and wanted to teach math. And a local coach that I went to church with ran a class B, which is the smallest in the state of Oklahoma, boys basketball program.
Give me the classifications in Oklahoma and Texas.
So Oklahoma ran class B through 6A. So B, A, 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A.
Okay, so what's the biggest in Oklahoma then?
6A. So I went to a 6A high school, and then my first coaching experience was class B, which took you to towns you'd never heard of. If anybody knows Oklahoma at all, if you go west of I-35, right, it's grain silos, and that's how you find towns. Okay. And so we would go to those gyms with this little team. Glencoe, Oklahoma was the name of the town. And the head coach was a friend of mine I went to church with, and he brought me on as a volunteer. And we won the Class B state championship in 2006. And I was hooked. I was like, oh, my gosh, this all the time, please. This is all
I refer to it as once you've tasted the blood, you're never going back.
Yeah. And we had a really special group of kids that were just bought in. We ran, you know, a couple different variations of motion. And we were a really good man-to-man team. And that was a testament to the coach. So after college, I knew I wanted to do it. I married a Louisiana gal, and we're from Oklahoma and Louisiana, which, barely pay teachers above the poverty line. it was always, me getting into education and us getting married where we were from. It was always going to be Texas. Texas actually pays teachers pretty competitively. So you can, you know, buy a decent house and
right, you'd be middle class. That's all you want to be.
Yes, and so what instead of ramen noodles on Tuesday night.
So what class? So this is crazy. So here's how Wisconsin does it. Wisconsin has five classes, which is we're not that big. I don't know why we have five classes, but that's a whole different podcast. We go one through five, one being the biggest.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So what does Texas do?
So Texas and Oklahoma are interesting little juxtapositions of each other because I spent 6 years in Texas public schools coaching 5A and 6A public school basketball. The league is known as the UIL, University Interscholastic League. Okay. That's all your public high schools.
All of them in Texas?
All of them in Texas are in the UIL. Yes.
That's a lot of high schools, I bet, in Texas.
It's a lot of high schools. And they go A through 6A, with 6A being the biggest. When I first got to Texas, there was only 5A, and then they expanded it to 6A because the playoffs were getting ridiculous. The bracket looked like varicose veins. So they increased the number of classifications to sort of whittle down the playoffs just a little bit.
Okay.
So I did 5A, 6A as assistant coach and math teacher. And my first head coaching opportunity was at a private school. And I was just ready. I didn't want to wait my turn at 5A, 6A public schools. I want to go a different path and do my own thing. So in Texas, the private schools are not lumped in with public schools. In Oklahoma and Louisiana, they are. So your private schools can actually – like a 2A private school, which would in Oklahoma, Louisiana would be a smaller school, can really bang on some public school 2As just because they have more resources.
Well, they do. It happens in Wisconsin too. Yeah, it does. And I tell the public schools in those brackets, like, get better then.
Yeah. So in Texas, there's a league called TAPS, the Texas Association of Private and Parochial Schools, and it has about 240 schools in it. And then they're also classified A through 6A. So you have about 40, give or take 40 schools in each classification.
Okay.
And my school is kind of right in the middle. It's the 4A level of TAPS. It's interesting because it's a smaller league, but the heads of the league will tell you they're bigger than something like 15 state leagues,
right?
Like bigger than just to throw one out there, like Wyoming. It's a bigger league than Wyoming's public school league. So,
oh yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
You know, it's still a big league, and it has its persnickety because it's got to run a league that manages schools with 20 kids in them and schools with over 1,000 kids in them, and it's got to put leagues together that have we've got to pull like El Paso. You've driven across Texas. We have teams in El Paso that don't have anybody in our league within a 4-hour drive of them. And you have to build a district and playoff schedule that includes these teams from El Paso.
Now they play, does public and private play each other?
Yes. There's no rules against public and private playing each other. In fact, I go to a couple of public, I try to go to at least one public school tournament a year.
Okay.
To just so my kids because it demands when the law of averages say, if you have 1,000 kids and my school has 200, law of averages says you're going to have a few more athletes that can do some kids things that my kids can't.
Right.
And it demands a little more execution of my kids, makes them mind their P's and Q's a little more with how they execute.
Right.
And then there's some really, really good private school basketball, especially in the Houston area. So building the schedule is fun because, you know, you can kind of have your pick of the litter. The funny thing with my league is there's teams that left the league and formed their own sort of rogue league. And now my league says, well, you can't schedule those guys. Okay, that's fine. So it's interesting, the little politics and the little private school coaches feel a certain way about public school coaches and vice versa. Well, I've been both, and you're all kind of the same. Like,
you are all the same. You're a big country. Texas is like a country, man.
Yes.
It's GDP is crazy. Okay, so that's where you are now. Where are you now?
So I'm at a private school in the north side of Houston called in Texas, if it has land on the end, it's Lund. So it's Northland.
Okay.
But it looks like Northland. So it's Northland Christian School. It's a small private school, about 500 students, about 175 in the high school. And we're at the 4A level in our league in TAPS. And I've been there 8 years as the head basketball coach. And then these last 4 years, I've been the campus athletic director along with being the head basketball coach. And if you know Texas, you know that I'm not supposed to exist as the athletic director and head basketball coach.
No, I didn't know that. Why?
That role, the athletic director role is usually set aside for the football coach.
That is true, yeah.
Football is king around here. So if you want to know me in a nutshell, I'm a basketball coach trying to make basketball matter in a football state.
Yeah. So do you have, your school is 200. Do you have a football program?
We do. We have an 11-man football program.
Oh, you're 11-man. Wow. Okay. Yeah,
we have 11-man. Our league has 6-man, and schools a little smaller than us kind of jump rope back and forth with 6 and 11-man football.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering if it, I trust me, it's like Indiana basketball kind of thing. You know, it's like,
yes.
You can coach at Newcastle, who's like, gym is bigger than, or Richmond, whose gym is bigger than most Division III programs. It is.
Yeah.
It's like, holds like 8,000-9,000. So tell me about your coaching philosophy.
You know, I spent 5 years as an assistant at Houston Memorial learning Princeton. And when I left Memorial for my first head coaching job, I thought I was going to run Princeton until they put me in the ground. I really enjoyed
it. It's cult-like. Right.
It's a little cult like. And so because I worked for this program that ran Princeton, I got invited to the little cult meetings of the local coaches that ran Princeton and got to pass the chalk with them. And, you know, that was cool. That grew me as a coach. And even there are coaches that package Princeton a little differently. And it's so that was interesting to see. Year two of my head coaching gig at this school, we were running Princeton and we played. So we're a little 4A private school with 200 kids or less. I scheduled a 6A public school with over 3,500 kids. They came to my little gym and they had a kid that was going to A&M and,
Buzz is at A&M, isn't he?
Yeah. So this was Savion Flagg was on this team that played for A&M, 6'6" swingman, nice player. So they come to our gym and my parents are funny because I love their reaction when teams walk in the gym. Like, I don't know, coach, they're big. I don't know if you're going to just chill. So we go out and we're getting our back doors and, you know, clearing out a side and running our drifts into drives and hitting open threes or using the cleared outside to score the ball. And we've got the lead going into the fourth quarter and they turn pressure up on us and they start trapping. And I said this in my little write-up for you. One of my kids, one of my favorite kids I've ever coached, he caught the ball out of a trap and didn't know what to do with it. Kind of held it and kind of looked at me and I was like, oh no, I've overcoached. I haven't taught him how to play breakdown enough. I haven't given him enough freedom. So that was year two. by year four, I was running dribble drive and giving kids a lot of freedom. And the philosophy simplified. The philosophy left Princeton concepts and became, okay, all I want as a basketball coach is a kid to touch paint and make a good decision. That's all I want.
Because you'll win if they can do that.
How I do that is 100% irrelevant and 100% dependent upon the type of kids I have. So for the last 4 years, we've been getting paint touches out of dribble drive, out of driving the basketball in advantage situations, setting ball screens when we can't get an advantage situation, and touching paint and dropping it off to a big or sharing to a weak side shooter. And if the weak side shooter doesn't like it, then he starts the drive action all over again. That's been my focus these last 4 years.
Hey everybody, hope you're enjoying the podcast. I'm going to do a big shout out to our two other podcasts, High School Hoops and Teacher Side Gig. I do talk about them often, but I don't give them a spotlight. They are great. High School Hoops talks weekly. We talk about kind of what you're going through. Like, we've been doing a lot of COVID right now because that's where we are, and what happened with that and how we're reacting to it. And Teacher Side Gig is teachers kind of looking at themselves and how they can make a little extra money on the side. And yeah, it's just me giving back to a little bit to all the teachers out there that I know have to do that. So also subscribe and like this podcast and go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. All right, let's head back to the podcast.
And so the first time I gave kids this freedom, we scored 82 in our first game. Once I gave them the freedom to just go play. I had some really smart kids, and I realized they were just sort of running Princeton to make me happy.
Right.
And just looking for chances where they could refuse a ball screen and just play two man, you know, stuff like that. And so I had this moment after year four, I was like, let's just do that. Let's just be that, you know, that's the personality.
Aha moment. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the personality they have. Let's lean into it.
And do you do anything full court wise, pressure wise, pressing wise?
So that year, the first year I did it, I had a guard that could really steer the ball. Kid, he's a great athlete in a small private school. Dude went to state in five sports. I was like, well, you're picking up the ball as soon as we get off the bus, Colby. So we were full court man. What that did was, when you elongate your defense in a very read and react sort of open flow type of offense, it makes your offense a full court offense.
Right.
And once it becomes a full court offense, your gaps and your angles are bigger. And so that was fun to play. You know, you can run dribble drive and read and react type things in a very packaged, canned half court type of setting. You can do it. But when you've got kids that can play with tempo, and those gaps get bigger, and it's easier to read, and you know, your first read is often a scoring opportunity. It was fun. So we were full court man to man. The next couple of years, I just didn't have the athletes that, you know, I had a kid that could maybe stay in front of your one, but if you gave it to your two, my kid guarding your two was just getting his doors blown off. And right. So then
they had an advantage at that point.
Yeah. So then we packaged some 1-2, some 1-2-1-1s and some 2-2-1s together, just to hide the fact that we weren't athletic, but also still want to kind of create tempo. And then there's been times these last few years where I've been running the same offense, obviously teaching it differently for the kids that can score the ball, but we've sat in half court man quite a bit, I just haven't, especially this year, you know, dealing with quarantines, and my two best players got hurt that were 6'2 and 6'4, long athletic kids. We had to just sit and protect paint. We won a district game 31-26 this year.
how do you deal with ball screens? How do you defensively deal with ball screens?
So with me, you know, I've always wanted to be the person that guarded ball screens 100 different ways. I still need to work on that head knowledge, but I have some. But honestly, there's not that much difference in the athlete and the size of my 1-5. There just hasn't been these last 3 years. So we just hard switch ball screens. We just hard switch because guard. Okay, you get a guard on big switch, and that's what you want as a coach against me.
Right.
Well, you've gone from a 6'2 kid to a 5'10 kid. To me, your scoring opportunity is about the same. So right.
The standard deviation isn't that big.
Yes.
And from someone that's coached longer than dirt itself, the number of kids that can actually, so let's say a guard or big gets a guard on him. First of all, the pass has to get in there.
Yes.
And then
which is
second,
still not taught much anymore.
Right. And then the second part is then they got to be able to score over this little guard that's like almost like a gnat below the, yes. I mean, there's too many variables that like, and then if you front them, if you get the guard to actually front the big, I can probably on one hand over the last 30 years tell you the number of good lob passes I've seen into the post.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah. So we hard switch everything. And honestly, like the kid that's been playing my five is a 6'2
right.
kind of athletic kid. So right. like, yes, you could totally switch onto a guard and guard him for a dozen seconds. I kind of feel okay about that. So,
right.
you know, I've tried not to.
I like it because it teaches the guards to have a little chip too. Like,
yes.
like you, these big guys think they can score on you. Like you're going to let them do that. Like,
yeah.
and then it's like, yeah, it's like, I don't want to say it's a Napoleon complex, but they're shorter and they've always been shorter than the big guys. And they're probably mm-hmm. jealous that the big guys are, you know, yeah, I love that. What's the hardest thing to teach?
Hardest thing to teach. It's interesting. I would say two things. Attack mindset.
Really? I don't think I've ever had anybody say that. So what do you mean by that?
I've got private school kids and the programs that I get them from, are very, we're going to run offense until we get the shot that coach wants, that, you know, we're going to run it for 45 seconds until we get the bunny off the glass. So one of the drills I do, it's called two-man paint, touch, and kick. We got guard line up top, line in the corner. I'm not creative with naming my drills. Right. Drive, touch the paint, throw to the corner, shooter who's working on knees bent, hand target, catch, step, shoot. And when it comes up in live action in a scrimmage, they won't shoot it. And I have to, why didn't you shoot that? Well, I don't know. Like, well, we just drilled for 4 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
You shooting that very shot. And I did that enough. I went, oh, they're coming from this school where they like, for me, a good offensive possession can take 8 seconds with a quality shot.
Right. You know what? I've told guys that have done this, because I've had this issue, is I said, if you don't shoot that, I'm going to pull you. And they go, what do you mean? I go, we run offense to get people open. If you are open and your feet are set and you don't shoot that, you can't play. And they look at me like I'm from Mars. And it's like,
yes,
I mean, and then once they figure out that, like, I will pull them, they will shoot it. And it's like, all of a sudden it's like, well, coach said, I said, if you're open, I mean, there's a reason there's books and DVDs and all this stuff diagramming offense, is because they're trying to get people open and you're open, shoot, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
So one thing I hit this year that was a delicate and difficult thing to coach was scaling kids' involvement in the offense properly. And let me explain what I mean. Let's say I had a kid this year that could steadily shoot 2 for 5 from 3. Okay. But if I asked him to shoot 6, 7, 8 times, his efficiency would fall off. Like, okay, well, I want you to shoot 10 times and make 4, you know? And then the kid that goes 1 for 5, okay, well, you know, you get 2, you shoot 2. And if you don't make either of those, you're done shooting. And, you know, that's the thing people understand about coaching, is how much catering there is to the individual, like how much we have to cater what we do to the individual, to their skill set and to their, you know, their psychology.
Right. This is the stats teacher in me too. Like I steal from Nate. I think it was Neighbors I stole this from, but it's basically red light, green light, yellow light kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I've had some green lighters, which are the ones I would yell at if they didn't shoot it. But then I'll have yellow and red lighters that think they're green lighters. And it's like, okay, let's come on in. And so here's the stat sheets from the first four games. Here's your percentage. You are not a green lighter. But if you come into the gym and show me you're a green lighter, let's do it. And then I have cutoffs where they can come in. And I've had kids move from a yellow to a green because they've proven to me that they can do it, either by practice stats or in a gym with someone defending them. But it's like, this is not equal opportunity. Like, you know, you're not LeBron. You know, there's a difference between LeBron and you. Like, everyone has different roles on this team. So I think that's a great, that's hard for them because they don't, why does he get 10 shots and I get three? Well, he's a better shooter than you are.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he's in AP calculus and you're not, like, that's his strong point, you know?
Yeah.
I always say talented and gifted program for basketball players is what I run. I run a talented and gifted program. Basketball parents. What do you have a coaching moment, like a success or a failure you could share with the listeners?
You know, I listed three on the little thing I sent you, and I already got into one. So I'll get into the third one. It was this point guard I had, and high motor kid, played one speed. And I put the ball in his hands cause he could just make the most happen. And, I had an angry dad call me one night cause he thought this point guard was killing us. And, I had to reassure the dad, like, well, okay, I have this kid on a path. Like, I'm not, because if I pull this kid to the side and I scream at him, I'm going to take away the best thing about him, which is his motor. And he's going to start to doubt himself. I'm not going to do that. One of my things as a coach is I say it all the time. I'm not here to stand in your way. And so I wasn't going to get in this kid's way, and I wasn't going to break his spirit because he was all heart. So every day with him, it was, okay, you, as a point guard with a ball in your hands, you're going to make 100 decisions in this practice or in this next game. And whatever number you did yesterday, let's say it was 51, I want you to make 55 right decisions today. And we just built, I started that language with him in December after I got him from the football team. And we just built that all the way through to where he was batting 85 out of 100 in the playoffs. And he had this incredible run, and he had four triple doubles in district, just best rebounding guard I've ever coached. But the assist to turnover numbers just got ridiculous as he just stayed on this path of, I'm going to make one better decision this game than I did last game. And this angry dad on the phone that wanted his kid to have the ball told me, well, you should pull him to the side and you should scream at him. I said, well, I remember to this day, I said, well, it's a good thing you're not the head coach of this program, because I'm not going to do that to this kid. That's not the type of kid. I know this kid, and I can put him on a path and he can lead this team to, and we played in the last game of the season that year with him at the helm.
It's
so,
the 1% rule. That's what I tell my boys. It's like, just all I ask is you get 1% better every day. Just one,
I like that.
Make one better, like,
I'm stealing that.
That every day, that it's like, it's a series. It's a cumulative thing. It's like, that's, you know, and some days, well, we won't get better one by 1%, but if we get better by 1% every day over an entire basketball season, we'll win a state title is what I tell them.
Yeah. Something I say to my, so 1% every day is good, but I will offer this to you, cause it's something I say to my kids all the time. Growth is never linear.
Yeah.
Never. You're a math teacher. It's a nasty scatter plot of data is getting better.
It is. It is. And, it's that growth mindset. It's like, you got to fail too. Like, that's what, you know, I don't know. I'm old as dirt, but I never learned about that part of it. I have as an adult, but I've learned more from the failures than the successes in a lot of respects. And that's what we got to teach them. Is there one thing that you've learned over the last 6 months in COVID?
Man, the things I've learned in this sort of pandemic year have not been basketball related. You know, quarantine and pandemic, it changed the world. You know, I don't know how long you've been doing what you've been doing now, but I bet you it's picked up because of the pandemic.
It picked up. Yeah. Not exponentially, but it picked up for sure.
No. So these, you know, when I first became the athletic director, I would say things to myself that you see influencers on Instagram saying, stay on that grind and, you know, put in the 16 hour days. And quarantine feels cruel to say this, but quarantine was the most mentally healthy I've ever been as a professional.
Oh, it's the most unstressed I've ever been.
Yes.
And I'm in the middle of a world pandemic and I'm not as stressed.
Yes. No, I would roll out of bed and log in my pajamas. Right. And do some work and do some purchasing because I'm the athletic director. And
hey, everybody, hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe, like, jump up and down, review, do whatever you got to do. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.